I'd like to welcome you back to the Parkinson's Road podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Tanya. I hope you all had a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm just getting over a cold, so Christmas and New Year's were pretty quiet around my house. But 2020 is shaping up to be a pretty incredible year. As you know, I'm going to be traveling to England to play in the Cure Parkinson's Cup football tournament in April. But while I'm there, I'm going to also be attending the Parkinson's Vision 2020 conference on the 17th and 18th of April in Leicester. Now, this conference is tailored specifically to those with young onset Parkinson's disease, anyone who is affected by Parkinson's, including healthcare professionals, and anyone who plays a key role in helping us live and thrive with Parkinson's disease is welcome to attend. So for more information or to order your tickets, please visit www.pdvision2020.com. It's going to be an amazing event, and I really hope to see you there. Now on to today's topic. So, I don't know if you know this, but Parkinson's disease affects over 10 million people globally. It's the second most common neurodegenerative disease after Alzheimer's, and currently there's no cure and nothing slows its progression. I'm pretty sure anybody with Parkinson's knows that. That means that in order for us to live any kind of semblance to a normal life, we have to take medications. Often it's multiple medications, multiple times a day, and with those medications come some side effects. Pretty much every drug has side effects to some degree, but one class of drugs used in the management of Parkinson's symptoms has been associated with particularly complicated side effects. I'm talking about dopamine agonist drugs. For many of us, they are a safe and effective medication that helps us manage the symptoms of our Parkinson's disease. But for other people, these medications have been the catalyst for the total annihilation of their lives. Mirapex, Ropinirol, and the new Propatch are three very commonly known dopamine agonists that have caused people taking them to develop compulsive-like behaviors like hypersexuality, compulsive gambling, shopping, eating, anything that gives you that kind of risky kick, any behavior that stimulates the reward centers of the brain. But realistically, they can manifest in many ways. It's any compulsive behavior that the person may engage in for more than an hour per day. These side effects, known as impulse control disorders, are defined as the failure to resist an impulse, drive, or temptation to perform an act that can be harmful to the person or others. Impulse control disorders are characterized by the perpetuation of repeated negative behaviors regardless of negative consequences. So you keep doing the thing you're not supposed to do even though you know it's going to turn out bad. There's a progressive lack of control over engaging in these behaviors. So at the beginning of the development of the impulse control disorder, you might be able to kind of have a semblance of control over gambling, for example. But as the problem gets worse, you have to fulfill this compulsive behavior more and more often. And there's a mounting tension or craving to perform these negative behaviors before acting on them. So there's a little bit of an anticipatory phase to this. After you've performed these problematic behaviors, there's a sense of relief or pleasure, and that's that risky kick that I'm referring to. Gambling is the most common manifestation of impulse control disorder, followed by hypersexuality. Now, when I say hypersexuality, this is a rather broad term that varies from person to person, but it is a change in the individual's usual behavior. For a lot of people, it often starts as intrusive thoughts or urges, which may then transition to inappropriate comments and acts. But it may also include promiscuity and extramarital affairs, consumption of pornography. And when I say consumption of pornography, I mean they could be on the internet, looking on their computer, chat lines, magazines, any way that people would be able to view pornography, compulsive masturbation and voyeurism. And some people develop paraphilias, which are recurrent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies, urges, or behaviors. And they include activities like sadomasochism, exhibitionism, or frotterism, which is achieving sexual stimulation or orgasm by touching or rubbing against a person without their consent. And it's usually done in a public place, like on the bus or on the subway. The altered sexual activity can occur within an established context. So, for example, a wife may start suddenly demanding for more sex from her partner, and perhaps they might try new things, or it may devolve into indiscriminate sexual activity in random contexts. So that basically means that person is going out and seeking multiple partners and possibly not being safe. The next manifestation could be excessive spending or shopping. This isn't just going out and buying all kinds of things. This is the purchase of 15 Art Deco lamps for a small two-bedroom bungalow. You know, it doesn't make sense. You already have a whole bunch of Art Deco lamps. You don't need 10 more. And buying clothes that you never wear, or shopping for mundane items with abnormal frequency. You go to the store and you just buy, you know, 15 dining room chairs and you only have a dining room table that seats six. And there are more manifestations, but these are sort of the most common ones. And it's important to know that gambling, sex, and shopping, which are the most frequently reported impulse control disorder manifestations, are all within the normal repertoire of human behavior. For the person with the impulse control disorder, it's the unusual extent and frequency of these behaviors that make them dysfunctional and damaging. It's also really interesting to know, and this I found this very interesting, that the hypersexual behaviors and gambling are found more often in men, and women tend to develop overspending and compulsive eating behaviors. The person with impulse control disorder, they know what they're doing is wrong and it will lead to bad outcomes, but they keep doing it anyway. This is not a disorder of cognition. That would be when someone may not be able to discern right from wrong, but rather this is a behavioral disorder. They know what they're doing is wrong, but they can't resist the urges to continue the behavior. So in the example of pathological gambling, the individual knows that spending their retirement savings on gambling is wrong, but they just can't stop. They just cannot resist the urge to do it. When I attended the Congress, the World Parkinson Congress in Kyoto this past June, I had a unique opportunity to hear some stories of people who are affected by the agonist drug-induced ICDs. While the most common behavior seemed to be hypersexuality, and that manifested in many ways, there were many other stories, including one man who became addicted, if you will, to getting tattoos. Prior to beginning his agonist drug, he had never had nor wanted a tattoo, but within a couple months of starting on the agonist, he became obsessed with it. And he would sit for 6 to 10 hours every 3 weeks for 10 months, I believe, like religiously, until his entire upper body was covered. Now, I had the opportunity to see his tattoos and they were absolutely incredibly amazing. He looks incredible, but I don't think that he really wanted those tattoos once he stopped taking the agonist drug. Another woman spent her entire retirement savings on redecorating her home and buying fancy new clothes. There was other stories. There were stories of people who, one man lost his job because he was a fairly senior executive in a major company and he was making highly inappropriate comments to people. And then another person was, through his work, he had to travel around the world. And while he was in all these foreign places, he would procure prostitutes. All of them said that they knew what they were doing. It just didn't feel wrong. And so they just were unable to stop. It's also important that I mention that realistically, any dopaminergic drug can cause the development of an impulse control disorder. Any dopaminergic therapy can cause patients to feel rewarded by these excessive behaviors, although the strongest link is with dopamine agonists. Now, when I say dopaminergic medication, I'm referring to any medication that stimulates dopamine release or may somehow impact dopamine or acts like dopamine, which is what dopamine agonists do in our brain. A less commonly talked about issue with our medication is dopamine dysregulation syndrome. We all know about impulse control disorders, the sex and gambling and all that kind of stuff, but dopamine dysregulation syndrome is the overuse of dopaminergic medication, often it's levodopa, despite adequate symptom management, and is complicated by marked dyskinesia. So what happens is the person who has dopamine dysregulation syndrome begins to crave the medication, so they take more, even though that at the original dose, their symptoms were adequately managed. Now, because they're adding more dopamine into their system, they're taking themselves out of the therapeutic range and there is too much dopamine circulating in their system, which would bring on dyskinesias. And some people can have quite serious dyskinesias or marked dyskinesias. They're very prominent. Dopamine dysregulation syndrome can also lead to aggressive or hypomanic behaviors in on times and anxiety and dysphoria in off states. When I say hypomanic, that behavior is characterized by a decrease in the need for sleep. So they're up all day and all night. They have this overall increase in energy. Their behavior may be unusual. There'd be a distinctive increase in talkativeness and confidence. They will also maybe exhibit grandiosity, distractibility, and hypersexuality. So while some people might think, well, what's wrong with being hypomanic, where, you know, maybe they're being productive and they're happy and they're, you know, they're doing well, especially because people with Parkinson's tend to have fatigue. So, you know, this person would look like, hey, they're doing okay because they have lots of energy. But it can become troublesome because during these manic phases, most often people engage in risky or inadvisable behaviors, and they can also become aggressive and cause lots of problems. Dopamine dysregulation syndrome is an addictive pattern. People use more medication than is required to control their symptoms. And as they use more, they crave and they feel that they need more. And some people will even pretend that their symptoms are worse than they are. They may fake symptoms when their symptoms are adequately managed in order to get more of the medication. When the medication wears off, they feel much worse. And they also crave the feelings they get when they're on. They feel, you know, euphoric almost. And this behavior can lead to the development of impulse control disorders, as well as something called punding, which is a compulsive fascination with and the performance of repetitive mechanical tasks like sorting or hobbying, so reorganizing things. For some people, they wouldn't have a problem with that, but it can become troublesome. So to those of you that are listening that have Parkinson's disease, I want to urge you to talk with your family and your doctor about impulse control disorders if you haven't already. And if you're a caregiver listening to this podcast, I want you to take note of your loved one's behaviors. And if you feel that there's anything that needs to be brought to the attention of their doctor, I'm strongly encouraging you to do it. The most important thing for everybody to know is there is no shame for asking for help. So what kinds of things can you look for? You know, what signs are we looking for in the development of impulse control disorders? An easy one would be weight gain. You know, if someone's eating in the middle of the night, if you suddenly notice that there's all kinds of wrappers in the garbage, that would be an indicator that the person is developing some kind of compulsive eating patterns. Is the person shopping more often? Are they spending more money? Are they being secretive about their finances? So maybe it's not your partner, maybe it's your parent or someone you know that you help to look after. Does the person seem somewhat more aggressive, especially when you confront them about the behavior that you're concerned about? If they're your partner, do you notice an increase in their sex drive? Are they spending more time on the computer? Are they taking more medications than they should? Do you notice any symptoms of depression, irritability, and appetite disturbances? So maybe someone's not eating. These things may be associated with the presence of these behaviors as well. And it's really important to note that impulse control disorders tend to start when medications are increased or more dopaminergic drugs are added. So they might be on one medication and the doctor adds a second one. So that's the time to start paying attention. And it may not manifest immediately. These problems are insidious, so it can take a period of time. It's really important that healthcare providers continuously screen their patients who are on these medications, and that us as patients and our caregivers are diligent in monitoring our behaviors, and we self-monitor, which is difficult because once you're in the impulse control disorder phase, you are at the mercy of the urges and you'll need help to quit. So for management, now this can be really difficult as the person with impulse control disorder may be aware that their behavior is a problem, but because they can't resist the urges to do so because they're on the agonist. So they will hide and they will pretend and they will rationalize like any addiction. The key to treating that is to reduce or discontinue the agonist. And that will usually cause an end to the behaviors. It may take some time, but it will bring the behaviors to an end usually. And this must be done very slowly. It has to be done under the supervision of a doctor to avoid withdrawal symptoms, which are known as dopamine agonist withdrawal. And that can bring on severe panic attacks and anxiety and depression, and it can create its own set of problems. So it needs to be done slowly and carefully. Now, dopamine dysregulation syndrome is much more difficult to treat because it is like an addiction, but the person with the dopamine dysregulation syndrome can't function without some form of dopaminergic therapy. So they have to continue taking their drug of choice, basically. There is no established treatment for this, and it is very difficult to treat as they cannot function without some form of the therapy. So oftentimes, this may be resolved with surgical intervention like deep brain stimulation, where the medication can be stopped or greatly reduced. Again, if you're listening to this podcast and you are the person with Parkinson's, I really want to urge you to have a conversation with your doctor and your loved ones about the topic of this show. And you may not be on an agonist, and you may be, and you're not exhibiting any symptoms. Creating a plan before something starts to go wrong will help to ensure that if symptoms do develop, they can be addressed immediately and effectively without prolonged misery. The purpose of this episode isn't to scare anyone. Dopamine agonists are very effective in managing symptoms of Parkinson's. I want everyone who listens to have as much information as possible about every aspect of Parkinson's disease, from symptoms to understanding the side effects of the medications. People who are actively engaged in understanding their chronic illness will have better management strategies leading to better outcomes, which is just a fancy way of saying the more you know, the better you can cope with your Parkinson's, and you will have an improved quality of life. You or someone you know might benefit from connecting with other people with Parkinson's in a caring and supportive environment, please consider joining us in the Parkinson's Road online support group in Facebook. It's open to everyone with Parkinson's, as well as caregivers or anyone whose life has been touched by the disease. Well, that's it for today's episode. I hope you like this show, and if you do, please consider clicking on the subscribe button so you'll never miss an episode. And don't forget to follow me on Facebook at the Parkinson's Road podcast page. I love hearing from you guys. Now, I have lots of great stuff planned for upcoming episodes, but if there's a topic you would like to hear more about, please message me. And finally, I just want to say thank you to everyone for tuning in and supporting me. It's absolutely amazing to me that the podcast has been played almost 1,000 times, but it makes me happy to think that maybe this podcast has helped just one person in some small way. That's good enough for me. Until next time.